You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Will the devil cry? Find out on this week's Retronauts. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey. Today's topic is the Devil May Cry series. And before I go any further, I have a special guest here. Of course, all my guests are special, but there is someone from the beating heart of Capcom who has made his way here. Who is this?
Hey, Greg Moore here. I'm one of Capcom's community managers.
Is Devil May Cry like your specialty? I know you guys kind of handle your own franchises there.
I like to think it is. I worked on the HD Collection, DMC, and then DMC Definitive Edition, and 4SE most recently.
Cool.
And definitely my favorite series of all time.
And I know you know Devil May Cry very well.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why you're on. You're like our expert. I mean, Jose, who are you?
Hi, I'm Jose Otero
exactly.
from IGN. And I will say, as someone who has witnessed Greg Moore play Devil May Cry, it is absolutely his game. Dude, you are amazing. We had a demo a long time ago, and I saw you just destroy that game as a bunch of different characters. It was really cool.
And
Thank you.
Painting quietly across from me. Who is this?
I'm Jeremy Parrish, bringing balance to the forest, as enthusiastic as Greg and Jose are about Devil May Cry. I am as completely ignorant of the series. It's just not my thing.
What do you have against the devil, Jeremy?
No, he's great. He plays fiddle. It's fantastic.
Well, I get it, because you didn't like Resident Evil either, that I know of, right? Like, that's also another,
this is a
different kind of game.
It just,
I don't know, like, stylish, cool action is not for me.
Okay.
What can I say?
Stylish, cool platforming is for you.
Mm.
Yes. There we go.
So Jeremy will occasionally chime in, I hope.
But mostly I'm just doing watercolors.
Yeah, he's working on Retronauts stuff, but it's important that he's here.
Oh. So yes, I got to keep the temperature up in this tiny vault.
Yeah, like absorb more oxygen because we don't have enough in here. So let's talk about before we talk about Devil May Cry, I did want to talk about the creator who is no longer with Capcom, hasn't been for about a decade now, but his name is Hideki Kamiya.
Mm-hmm.
And he was born in 1970, and the reason I say that or I point that out is that he is from the first generation of game developers that grew up with the Famicom, that grew up with this idea of what our understanding of a video game is. Hmm. Like, if you go on to Twitter, and he will probably block you if you talk to him, but if you go to Twitter and observe him, his avatar is a cartoon version of him with a Famicom cartridge sticking out of his head. So he was a huge nerd all his life. He said, like, Link to the Past, Gradius, Castlevania are his favorites, and he started at Capcom in 1994. He worked on this really bizarre game that never came out here. It was a variant of a variant of the Incredible Machines. Like, apparently the Incredible Machine, which was this PC kind of game slash toy, it had a variant called Incredible Toons, which was more for kids. So there was a Ghosts and Goblins version of that. Called Arthur To Astaroth No Nizo Makaimura. Jeremy?
Nizo Makaimura.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's Arthur and Astaroth's Mystery of Devil Island, basically.
Yeah, and I mean,
mysterious Devil Island.
You can watch videos of this online. It looks nothing like a Hideki Kamiya game. Like, it is just like – it's just a variant of the Incredible Machine or the Incredible Toon. So that's where he got started. But I think people know him most for his work on Resident Evil. He was a planner – mm-hmm. Whatever that means.
That's designer.
Yeah, it has a very vague, like very broad meaning, I think. Mm-hmm. And of course, he directed Resident Evil 2 after that all by himself. And basically, Mikami was his mentor. Mikami's mm-hmm. not too much older than him, but he said the greatest moment of his life was when Mikami praised him, which I guess never happened before. Shinji Mikami, who created Resident Evil. Apparently, Shinji Mikami really liked Beautiful Joe, and that was the greatest moment of his life. And that's Hideki Kamiya. Like, he is very good at making this kind of game. Like, he has not stopped making Devil May Cries, although they're called different things. Mm-hmm. Not to say that he's ripping his own work off. He's just very good at making this whole stylish action kind of experience and different variants on it. So let's talk about the actual birth of Devil May Cry. Who can tell me where this game started? I don't want to be the only one talking here. Maybe Greg or Jose can jump in. I'm sure you know where it came from. This is no secret.
So, I mean, I've heard a lot of, you know, disjointed bits and bobs about it. But it was definitely going to be a Resident Evil game to start. They were working on RE4, but this was before they had all the crazy ideas that would change Resident Evil forevermore. Actually, a lot of the info that I'm going to be divulging today comes from the art book, which I got an early copy of. This comes out hopefully in the next few weeks. It's an art book that has all sorts of candid backstory on the development of the series, and there's some surprising stuff in there. They actually have like this concept art of the Dante and Virgil twins as infants. Like blanketed in the Umbrella logo. So even back when it was an RE4 project, they had the idea of the twins.
Yeah, no. And I mean, I don't know how directly this relates to it, but I talked to Mikami a few years ago, I think it was during Bit Summit, and just brought up sort of one of the most important chapters to me in Resident Evil was the remake, which was right before 4. Mm-hmm. And he sort of made it sound like the fact that remake didn't sell was the reason why the series ended up changing as much as it did. So it could be the reason why Kamiya's game was scrapped, or couldn't be the reason. Like, history will not know the answer 100% on that.
You know, what I've heard people say in the past is that, as the design phase got a little further along, they just started feeling like it didn't feel quite like a Resident Evil game. It felt like its own thing.
Yeah.
And then I think they just – maybe it was that in tandem with RE Remake not doing as well as they'd hoped.
Yeah.
That they,
Yeah, and at the time, Capcom was very much experimenting with the Resident Evil formula, right? You had Resident Evil, you had Dino Crisis, you had Onimusha.
Yeah.
Those games all sort of dabbled in the same kind of control style where it was sort of fixed tank controls, but they were trying combat in different ways. Dino Crisis, maybe not so much. Not until 2 did I feel that game changed a lot.
Yeah.
But Onimusha was 100% very different than Resident Evil, even though it sort of looked like it, for better or worse.
Yeah, I think, you take what you know and you sort of branch off from that. Even Killer 7 to a degree, which was...
Yeah, it's weird. Like Resident Evil 4 is as good as it is because it got 4 chances, which no game even gets, like, a game barely gets 1 chance to get made now, but that game got 4 chances. And just reading about the early version of this is pretty fascinating. Like, apparently, people have been piecing together the history of this based on things Kamiya tweets. And apparently, the original version of Devil May Cry was about a guy named Tony who was enhanced with like biotechnology, and the entire game was about like unraveling the mystery of Tony, which is not as compelling of a name as Dante, I gotta say. I think that's before the whole devil thing entered. And again, it was going to have like the static camera angles or the pre-rendered camera angles of Onimusha, but he felt that was not dynamic enough because this game was all about like looking cool and doing cool things. And juggling enemies with guns, which is another thing from Onimusha. Apparently, that was a bug in the game, juggling enemies. So it's like, let's turn this into a feature because it's just so fun and cool.
Yeah, that's how I feel like I learned about Devil May Cry, right? Just that there was some bug in Onimusha and you were able to sort of keep an enemy suspended, and there was something very cool about that. Mm-hmm. Something that just felt like you turned the tables. Now you are not the vulnerable one, but this enemy is.
You guys know Brett. He's been on the show before.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Brett's great.
He has described Devil May Cry as Resident Evil Inside Out. And I think that's pretty apt, especially with the first one. You have infinite ammo. You're the most dangerous thing in the room most of the time.
Yeah.
And you can jump around. You're very mobile.
You're doing all the things you'd be doing, like collect this key, open this door, get this emblem. But it's broken up into tiny, like, little chunks, like with each thing just spells out your objective for you.
Yeah, yeah. No, and just to bring us back to the camera for a second, but of course there was a desire to get away from Resident Evil's framing of where the camera was, but I feel like the first Devil May Cry still kind of hung on to it, but it kind of followed you a little more. It kind of tried to be, you know, sort of with you through all of these different things, because you would turn certain corners and you would have that, you know, disorientation for a few seconds. At least it's disorienting now to me. It wasn't then. I was 100% wired into
we were used to
how that game worked and how that camera worked, and I was okay with it. But it's true in Brett's, you know, sort of description of it. It is Resident Evil Inside Out, because you have an unlimited supply of bullets. You have a powerful melee weapon. You're able to – it's not about limited resources. It's about looking good while fighting these things. And that's something that in Resident Evil, combat didn't look good. Combat was more about survival. It was scrappy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And one thing I do want to acknowledge before we start talking about the individual games is, like, I've labeled this in my notes as the Matrix in the room, where it's like we have to take ourselves back to that 4-year period of pop culture where nothing was cooler than the Matrix until then the sequels came out and we're like, oh, this wasn't very good.
Hot trash.
Yes, exactly. Hot trash. But in that time, the impact that movie had was indescribable. Everyone who watched the first Matrix was like, I want this to be a video game. And I feel like Devil May Cry was the first game to truly take those actions, that kind of action, that kind of style, and make it successfully into a game. Am I crazy or
no,
is this?
That's a very good point. I never really thought about that. But yeah, everyone's trying to harness that stylish combat that the movies had, but you know, there's a lot of awkward attempts.
You're not counting Conqueror's Bad Fur Day?
That came later.
Did it?
Oh, wait, that was the same year. That was the same year.
It was 2001.
Yeah.
Wasn't it 2001?
Yeah. It was a late N64 game. Huh.
God dang.
And they still got the bullet time in. But I think you and I have also, Bob, kind of talked about one more thing in Devil May Cry that I feel we may have missed, and I hope I'm not jumping ahead.
Oh, no, go for it.
But also with respect to the camera, and it is that Dante seems very aware that he is sort of being watched. And in cutscenes, like the first time he runs into Alistair, where he's impaled by it, and that becomes a trope in the series from that point on, right? Every game, he sort of gets impaled on a sword and then comes off of it for some reason because it just is. But when he reaches over behind him to grab that sword after he gets up, he sort of looks directly at the camera.
Yeah.
It's this moment where you kind of have this almost silent, I know I just did
sort
that.
Sort of a Ferris Bueller moment.
I'm
in control here. Don't worry.
And in that scene, back to the Matrix, like there is that bullet time scene with the glass shattering around him and like it's spinning around him in slow motion and stuff as he falls backwards onto the sword. I mean, it's like it looks a little hokey because it's a 14-year-old game, for God's sake. But back then, it looked so cool. And this game has a really interesting visual style, Devil May Cry 1. So let's just talk about the game. I mean, were you guys like trying to figure out what the actual release date was, like out in the hallway earlier?
If you look on Wikipedia, I think it says like late August, but I definitely remember getting it in fall, and I'm pretty sure I pre-ordered it.
I have October 11th for the U.S. release date.
That sounds correct.
I remember it being like a kind of like a Halloween-y type game. And like Jose was saying earlier, like it's hard. Like, you can't take Dante at face value. We should talk about the main character, Dante, because, I mean, there's not a lot to him. Like, at one point I was like, oh, this must be what Japan thinks is cool. But I think there is a kind of winking self-awareness where it's like, this guy is kind of a jackass. And they really play that up in DMC. But he's like, he's talking to no one in particular. Like, he can't possibly be talking to anyone. And like Jose says, he knows there's a camera watching him. And that's basically what the game is about performing, looking cool, and being like this badass.
Maybe he's not very self-aware, but he is very much brash and arrogant and nothing like a Resident Evil character, where those characters are more like survivors. Like, no one looks cool, at least in the first three Resident Evils. I can't think.
Only Barry in the cool opening with the FMV.
Well, yeah. Barry had a cool gun. Like, you know, everyone looked at that huge hand cannon and you were just like, oh my God. But no one quite looked like Dante in any of the way we recognize those games to be, those survival horror games that led to that first stylish action game.
Yeah.
But I do feel like some of stylish action, and maybe this helps this point and maybe it doesn't. I don't have a lot of evidence to support this, but it does feel very rooted in like early or 90s like action arcade games, like beat 'em ups almost, like just sort of scrolling through stages, beating up on things, having some moves and some weapons to kind of pick up and use, and you not really being afraid of everything. I'm not saying it's like it links back to Double Dragon or The Punisher or something like that, like those kind of coin-op arcade games, but it does feel inspired by some of that.
That is interesting. Like, I was trying to figure out like what the roots of this game were, because I mean, you have like combos like in a fighting game and you're fighting enemies like in a brawler, but that's a really good point. point, like, this kind of just made it all happen in 3D. And I don't think anyone made as good of an action game in 3D until this point. Is that being crazy to say that? Like, I feel like when I play Devil May Cry, I'm like, this is how a 3D action game works. Like, 3D platformers are fine, but now this all feels so good. Like, Castlevania 64 didn't work for me. No, like, things like that.
I feel like I've told you this before, but I feel like Dino Crisis 2 was pretty close.
Really? Okay.
That might sound crazy.
I've never played it, so you could be right.
Yeah, so this – it had sort of a ready aim function just like a Resident Evil would and just like the first Devil May Cry did, but it also had a very quick melee attack. One of the characters had like this big machete and he could just swing it out very quickly. And you couldn't perform combos with it, but it still felt really good, Greg, to switch between like gun combat and melee combat. And I don't know if I had played a 3D game that had gotten that part of it right in that style before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. In my mind, there's a very clear shift in sort of vision between 1 and 2 and then 3. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, but...
No, I mean, we could talk about the design of 1 because it is so unique to the series, and it could be my favorite still, even though it's very weird and not what the series would eventually become. Mm-hmm. Like, it is very about, like, exploring this one confined location and the same, like, very Resident Evil puzzles, like finding emblems, finding keys, doing stuff like that. But please continue, Greg.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, in my mind, definitely the fighting game influence comes out way more in 3. Mm-hmm. In 1, I really feel like it is, like, not that far a leap from something like Onimusha, which was itself sort of a small leap from Resident Evil. You know, Resident Evil in a different setting, and you have a sword. Now you have a sword and guns. But it's still basically played like an RE game, except you're just really powerful. Obviously more action focused, but it still had this sort of slow pacing and gothic horror. It's a little eerie. You're solving puzzles, and you don't have that much choice in your combat. There's more choice than I think most games up to that point. But then when you hit 3, it really is about. I really think it is kind of taking what they knew from 2D fighters and 2D brawlers and transferring it pretty much verbatim to a 3D game. And you start seeing things like combo videos emerge.
Absolutely.
Which was a phenomenon that had previously only really existed with stuff like Marvel vs. Capcom 2, you know, like fighting games. And they found a way to add that much flexibility and style with the combat and choice that – people started creating this sort of style scene with Devil May Cry.
Yeah, I mean, it would get very much more technical, like, because with 3, there are 4 different styles, and I assume a different moveset per weapon per style. So it gets that complicated, and eventually, like, I mean, like, what Kami is doing now and what DMC does is, like, a huge evolution of that, where it's, like, frame-perfect stuff you can do and, like, these crazy cancels and blocks. But in this game, it's still very basic, and this game feels very experimental. Like, I like to remind people, this game has first-person underwater stages. Like, no one remembers that. I
mean, we forgot.
It's literally 2 rooms, and I'm pretty sure Capcom was like, let's see what this is like. You know, we could use this in another game, maybe. And then there's, like, the weird Star Fox-style, like, final boss fight. Like, no one remembers these things, but it was like, well, this is weird and cool. Like, I'm glad someone is doing this.
So it has kind of the same diversity and just randomness as Bayonetta.
Yeah,
you're saying, basically.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that he carried that over to his new studio.
There's definitely
for sure.
a line of commonality in terms of the creator there.
Oh, yeah. In a lot of ways, Bayonetta is the Devil May Cry sequel from Kamiya we never got. One more point to the original game is that it had an economy. It had the system where you perform well, you get orbs, you buy new, you know, more powerful moves, you sort of get the stinger is the coolest thing you wanted to get right away because you wanted
to
close the distance between you and a target as quickly as you can. And then the double jump, which was expensive. It was super like that thing cost a bunch
of
red orbs.
It cost a lot, like tens of thousands of orbs. Yeah,
but once you got it, you were like, okay, now I could explore these sort of like gothic, you know, hallways and spaces and try to find secrets, which there were. Were some. Like, it was a mysterious, like, Resident Evil-like castle, but you had so many abilities under your belt.
I love the setting in this game, but I do want to know, like, where you guys were when this game came out and, like, were you anticipating it? Because, like, this was a very, like, great fall for the PS2. We have, like, Metal Gear Solid 2, Silent Hill 2. We have Devil May Cry. We have things like Eco. Mm-hmm. Like, 2001, a fall was like, this, okay, now the PS2 is great. Like, did you guys know about this game? I know I reserved it, and like I was like a regular mall rat at this time, and the software, et cetera, I frequented, they were getting rid of their Dante standee like a few weeks after the game the game was out, and I took that home. Like,
oh, nice.
I had a giant Dante standee with like glowing red eyes in my room for like the rest of the year, I guess, until I got rid of
Bob
it.
Bob would wake up and go, "Time to go to work. Leave the house.
Let's rock." Yeah. So I mean, I was on board. I was like, okay, I want something to play for my PlayStation 2. This looks so cool. And like, Jose, how about you? Like, where were you? Did you want this immediately?
Yeah. So what year was this?
It's 2001.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was either in college or just getting out of college, and I remember being on board from the second I saw the first trailer, where I was like, what is this? And I think if I remember right, it sort of brought up, you know, from the makers of Resident Evil or something, but it was a completely different spin. Like, you saw this main character just shooting up the place like no character in a Resident Evil game could,
yeah,
and moving and sort of combating. And I would read previews in EGM, and I would remember them just describing that this is Resident Evil with the scales completely tipped the other way, where you are like a dominating, powerful character who everything in the mansion or in this castle needs to be afraid of you. And I was really taken by that idea. And granted, I wasn't that into like combat-driven games. I mean, I was into Street Fighter, and I liked Street Fighter, but I definitely wasn't as good as like – you know, those like really, really those folks who had put in a ton of time and, you know, had combos and things down like nobody's business. But I really did admire that concept. And also it was at a time when like I feel the PlayStation to me didn't have sort of I was looking for games that were different, that weren't like the previous generation. Mm-hmm. And to me, this was one of those first games that stood out.
Yeah, there was nothing like this before, even though, like we said, there were steps building towards it.
Yeah, like this and Metal Gear Solid 2 were two games that I absolutely wanted a PlayStation 2 to experience. And they were, you know, really, really good.
The PS2 was the first console where it really struck me that it takes a while for consoles to really get their footing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
I was a senior in high school when this game came out, and I had gotten a PS2, you know, a few months before this, and was kind of just grasping at titles. You know, there wasn't that much out yet that really spoke to me. I was just kind of getting whatever reviewed well. You know, I was like, the first game I got was Red Faction, which is fine. It was just not really my thing.
Hmm.
But it was like all I could think of to play, you know? And it wasn't until that fall when I really felt like the PS2 had come into its own. I think GTA 3 came out, and then DMC, and then other stuff. But yeah, definitely for me it was PSM. Remember that magazine?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
They started putting out previews. And first it was actually the title, I think, that struck me. It was such an unusual title.
It was a weird one, yeah.
Has that ever been explained? I mean, you're the official Capcom guy. I'm just curious if there's ever been an official statement.
Everyone always gives some kind of vague, like, muttering that, you know, it's derived from Devil May Care.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how that applies here.
Yeah. Like, I assume that's where it started. But
yeah.
Like,
but there were also action movies like Romeo Must Die and weird things like that.
Right.
That it's just like, well, why not? You know, let's be weird.
These
see what happens.
Yeah, just a different type of naming convention. And
it's really evocative. Like, there's nothing – like, there are a few games that sound, like, immediately, like, interesting. Like, ooh, Devil May Cry. What's that mean? Yeah.
Yeah, and you heard that sort of that music in the trailer, which was – I don't quite know what genre I would describe.
What would you call the music in – it's not quite new metal or whatever.
Well, God, I don't even remember with one. That, you know, I think that they kind of turned over a new leaf with 3, and that's when you get that really, like –
yeah,
you know, that kind
of borderline screamo.
Yeah. One, I mean, it's just kind of gothic, like, you know, Eerie mood music.
But even that riff that played when you were in combat, like you looked forward to that. At least I did. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I was just a dumb 20-year-old.
It feeds into the action because it's like you just the guitars kick in and it's like let's kick ass. And
then you hear that riff on the guitar and you're just like, this kicks ass. I'm about to kick ass. Like, let's do this. And you do.
I can't even remember how you would see a game trailer back then before you.
That's a great question. So there was CDs that came packed in with magazines.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure the internet wasn't there like trailers on stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, I remember obsessing over the Metal Gear Solid 2 trailer.
Oh, man.
You'd go to IGN or something and watch a postage stamp sized video and be like, I bet that looks amazing.
The watermark takes up most of it.
Yeah, you'd squint really hard and you would imagine. No, but that trailer, I still remember like just getting goosebumps from the concept because that trailer sold me so well. Mm.
Yeah. But with the PSM preview, them talking about being able to juggle enemies with your bullets, that was the very first thing. I was like, I will buy this day one.
Yeah. The fact that you could just swipe, you're up there now, and then
I think I was already like wishing for a game that had like sword and guns together. I remember when do you remember Rising Zan on the PS1?
Oh, just barely.
Samurai Gunman. I still wanted that idea to be good, and the idea was good.
That's kind of why I like I said earlier when I talked to Bob about when I think about the genesis of this game, I always wonder if Dino Crisis 2 had any sort of hand in it, just because it had an economy, it had that simple way to bounce between those two combat styles. I'm not saying it did it very well, but it felt like the seed could have been planted there. Yeah, and then it just continued to evolve into what Devil May Cry turned into. And those boss fights, that spider, we haven't talked about him.
I wrote that down. Well, let me introduce it real quick. Like, Kamiya, his goal with this game is like, I want to make a game for people who play video games. I want to challenge, like, I'm not going to say true gamers, but you know what I mean. Like, people who are good at video games. And this game, playing it now is easy because I've played Dark Souls, I've played Bloodborne, I've done it all. Mm. I've seen it all, baby. But this game, like, that Fire Scorpion was like, that was like a very geisty moment where like everyone was playing the game, like there was a Penny Arcade strip about it, like that was a trial by fire moment. Like you need to learn how the devil trigger works, which is a thing where you turn into a different form and you can get health back by attacking enemies. You need to learn how to dodge, you need to learn how to like take cover, things like that.
Item cowboy, I mean, you could sit on the back of the spider and just shoot down at it, but the only way you knew that was from the attract mode. Like the game didn't really show
exactly
you
but I mean that was the moment for everyone where it's like you either learn how to fight this boss or you trade the game in because it's going to get a lot harder from here. I mean, like, were we all in that weird, on the same page with this boss? Because I know I was, like, maybe 20 tries it took me. And then
It's definitely that first moment, I think, where you realize, like, you're going to have to do some hard work to get through the game. And then it's like you have your breakthrough moments, like, oh, now I know how to do it. And then he's easy.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm no, like, ultimate awesome gamer, but when I played it recently, it was like maybe it took me a minute to fight him, and I was like, why was this hard?
When you know what to do, you know what to do.
Yeah, no, definitely. And if anything, I think that at least the opening of Devil May Cry, those first couple of levels, I like the idea that when you did get to the spider, if you couldn't take him, you retreated to the other levels to grind sort of orbs and then buy some of the additional moves. Like, if you didn't have the stinger and you tried to fight that spider, it was really tough.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
There were some attacks that if you timed it just right, when he fired like a fireball out of his mouth, you can actually, I think, hit it back or even use a stinger to jam just basically into his mouth.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility actually with the boss fights in that game, and they sort of encourage you to explore. You can actually, you can parry the fireballs back and do massive damage. And then there's that chase scene after the first fight. Where he comes back after you in the hallway, and you can totally just run away into that safe room.
Or you can actually
parry fireballs at him until he dies.
Yeah, and get a lot of red orbs, which is the universal DMC currency.
And you wanted that in blue orbs especially, right? Because you wanted stuff to sort of buff your health and give you a chance to stay alive longer. Because it wasn't a game where you had like strength stats or anything like that.
No.
Like the arsenal you had was basically your way to deal better damage, but you wanted to keep Dante alive as long as you could.
I think like those upgrades in the economy and stuff, like it really speaks to me as someone like Kami who grew up with 8-bit games, because those kind of mechanics feel very 8-bit to me, like beating a boss, getting its weapon, like getting heart containers or whatever you want to call them, the blue orbs, and then, you know, maxing up your max health and your max magic. Like, they feel very like of the 8-bit tradition that he came from.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, and we haven't talked too much about the meticulous grading.
That's very important. Please, Jose, like that is a commie. Like, he is a cruel taskmaster.
Yeah, no, and I don't think it really dawned on me just how evil the grading system to Devil May Cry could be until you and I talked about it when we worked at 1UP together. And it was just like, yeah, you are constantly being judged. Your combat prowess, your combo prowess, your ability to not take a hit. And you would see the scale on screen, you know, the points would increase, but then the letter grade would also increase. Mm-hmm. And so you got that satisfaction of, okay, I've gone from D to C, I've gone from C to B, I've moved up to, and then you discovered S, and you're like, oh my God, like after A, you're just like, wait, what is an S?
And now there's two S's.
Yeah, what is going on?
Yeah.
But it was a satisfying thing in hindsight, because it made you feel like, yeah, I'm doing that good. And I'm actually like beating this system for the most part. Like I'm making it work.
Yeah, I mean, you basically had to never stop hitting a button. Like I love that future games would automate the gunfire, but in this game you have to be like hitting the button as fast as you can fire the gun, like the square button.
Yeah, almost like a Mega Man game or something. Right? Yeah, where you have to like just or I'm forgetting.
Or some like
other
a shmup or something.
Game.
Yeah.
There's definitely some parallels to make with Mega Man, especially in 3, but not Mega Man 3, but DMC 3. Mm. But now I just kind of picture Kamiya in the room heckling you.
That's the best.
Kind of what he does
do
on Twitter, actually. Yeah. I think he's just transferred that grading system over.
Yeah. So anything more to say about the May Cry 1? I mean, we're going to go into the sequel in a second here. I just want to make sure we hit everything. Like, it's really great. I think it's very unique to the series. It's something that I like, where it's this weird mishmash of Resident Evil and an action game where I'm glad they stepped away from it, but still it's a wholly unique and interesting experience that can only really happen in this one moment in time. And that's why I like it. How do you guys feel about it in comparison to the rest of the games?
I think in some ways I still feel like they really nailed the Dante character. I mean, you know, it was a fairly basic archetype, but he was just the right amount of cocky. He wasn't so over the top, like, you know, zany Ninja Turtle character.
And he doesn't talk that much in this game.
He doesn't talk that much, but when he does, you know, you get that sense of who he is. You get a little bit of character, some jokes, you know, but he still has an emotional side. We all know the dark side or dark soul with light line.
I made a note of that. We have to acknowledge it. I mean, even if you dislike reading, it's still one of the greatest line readings.
I expunged that from my brain, and I was like, wait, what is he? Oh, no, that's right.
I will put it in the episode right here.
I should have been the one to fill your dark soul with light!
This is a more specific thing. I wanted to note about Phantom because you were talking about him.
The spider guy.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you guys knew this. You probably did. When you encounter him the final time, do you know about the window? There's the whole middle of the room is this glass window. And he does this, like, jump stomp move. And if you, like, guide him to stomp on the window like 5 times, he'll crash through and die right away.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
And that's awesome. To me, that's also sort of an NES-y kind of thing. It's like you just know these little secrets.
Yeah, like a weird arcane secret.
You'd
have
to read a magazine to know.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of some of the Resident Evil like puzzle elements, like find the key kind of stuff. Like, I have to admit, some of that stuff went right over my head because it almost felt tonally at odds with how the action game concept of it worked.
And it's very disorienting too. Like, the camera angles are made to make you confused and not know where you are. Yeah. So,
but in hindsight, the minute-to-minute combat is what I really enjoyed. Like, fighting those wolves that became shadows into the ground.
Oh, yeah.
At certain, like, they
still a really cool graphical effect, too.
Great graphical effect, great fight, really satisfying. And then when you pump up the difficulty, the way the behaviors on a lot of the enemies changed, completely caught me off guard. And a lot of the boss fights I thought were really good. Like, you can say what you want about sort of the story. And I don't really like to I don't know. I don't have strong opinions one way or the other regarding Devil May Cry and the stories in Devil May Cry. And some of them. I mean, I have very harsh opinions about the second one. But I will say that in terms of, like, you within the first 3 or 4 levels, I want to say, maybe the 5th level, you're fighting someone that feels like an equal in Nello Angelo. Mm. And you start to put together, even though that ends up, you know, you find out it's Virgil, it was still a really cool moment because up until that point, yeah, the spider boss was tough, but I felt like nothing could really stand toe-to-toe with you. And then here you are fighting something that is absolutely just like you. Mm. And you're like, well, wait a minute. What's going to happen? and so I really enjoyed that in hindsight. Like, I really remember a lot of the boss fights and just – really studying and trying my best to figure out their phases and how to fight them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think it holds up. I wholeheartedly recommend you get the HD collection that came out like three or 4 years ago. I reviewed it for 1UP. I think I gave it a really good score. But it's an amazing deal. The games look fantastic, and at least 1 in 3 are worth playing. So I'm sorry.
Speaking of the game yes. in between.
So, unfortunately, we have a little bit of a sophomore slump with Devil May Cry 2. It came out in January of 2003, and this is one of a few times when I worked at a game store where people took their anger about a game out on me. Where
really?
It was this and Metal Gear Solid 2. Like, the game came out. We sold 1 billion copies. Next day, a line of people, like, angry, like, I want to trade this in. Like, what is this? Like, I didn't make the game, but... Here's the thing. I want to be charitable to it, and not just because Greg's here. Like, I was playing it again, and I keep trying to... I keep trying to replay this game. Like, I want to at least play through it, you know, give it a chance. But it's like it's a good action game for 2003. It does not feel like a Devil May Cry game to me. I mean, it has the visual elements and the characters, but the way the fighting feels is so different. And I think it's because, like, I interviewed Hideaki Itsuno earlier in this year for US Gamer. Please check that out, that interview. I was really excited about it. But he was essentially brought onto the project to sort of, like, halfway through the development to save it. Like, it was a funny story in the interview. He's like... he was essentially just like recruited, like he'll do it. And he was like, I will. And so he was basically thrown on not really – I mean he's a talented guy based on what he did in the future. But I don't know if he was ready to direct a Devil May Cry at this point in his life.
Well, for folks who don't know though, what were some of the things he worked on in the future? If you could just give them
Dragon's Dogma, Devil May Cry 3, which is fantastic, and 4. Okay. And is there anything else he's worked on? I can't
– Well. So I guess not since then. I mean, he was heavily involved in DMC.
Okay. Yeah, so that's right. He was overseeing that.
Yeah. Realize. But then, yeah, Dogma and 4SE.
And that's DMC ones. The reboot, kids, not DMC the first one.
Yeah.
It could get a little confusing.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think something that's lesser known about him is what he did before DMC.
That's what I want to know.
He actually – I think they brought him on because he had a pretty good resume already, but it was just so late. You know that there's only so much you could do, but he was a director for years. He did a lot of fighting games that are, you know, sort of. I always think of them as the more fun fighting games, maybe less like esports stuff. But like
Capcom
versus SNK 2, Power Stone 2,
yeah.
Plasma Sword, all the ones that I love.
Plasma Sword.
Yeah. I love that game.
He came from fighting because so did the Monster Hunter director. Like he was making sprites and Darkstalkers and then he was suddenly the Monster Hunter guy. It's like they come from these places you don't expect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so... You know, he knew how to direct a game. He knew the process, and he had a knack for action, albeit in a different format. So they brought him on, and then I don't think it was really until 3 that he got to do what he wanted with the series.
Yeah. And I mean, Capcom basically after Devil May Cry 1 realized they had a hit on their hands, right? I mean, it sold well, or at least it sold well enough to them that they said, "Well, we're going to make a second one." Who knows why, and you know the changes that it went through.
Yeah,
but it was a. Unfortunate. And I have to be honest. I'm going to be very clear. I have finished Devil May Cry 2 6 times.
You're allowed to say whatever you want about it.
Yeah, you're the most knowledgeable person.
So I put in a ton of time on that game. And I still remember that first night disappointment, right? Like I remember getting out of work, bringing it home, sort of playing through it and going, this just feels tonally weird. And even the main villain, which looks like a weird cross between oh my God! Like some weird, like
looks like Nobunaga to me.
Yeah, it does.
Like in every game back then.
Yeah. No, absolutely. or some '80s like movie actor. I don't know. Like I'm sure I could think of someone. Maybe Ted Danson with a beard. Like I'm not sure, but with a mustache. But it was strange to me because after playing it so many times, the conclusion I came to is that Dante I mean, he changed a lot tonally in that game, right? Like, I mean, he was the silent, stoic type. It felt like he was much more mature, and the idea was for him to be older. But I had a lot more fun fighting as the other character in the game. Yeah. She felt more true to what that what the style of that game was, whereas Dante's fighting style. And I was at, like, crazy levels of hype for that game because, like, you saw the trailer and I just saw a wall run and I lost my mind.
Yeah, yeah, that's like, a big feature in this game, is wall running.
I just was like, oh, my goodness. And that was, again, like, young 20-something Jose learned very hard, a hard lesson that day where, like, trailers, like, you can get excited about something and then find out it can fall completely flat.
So you guys have kind of danced around this, but why is Devil May Cry 2 so bad? Like, you just talk about it in these vague terms. What's the deal?
I don't get it. Like I said, it doesn't feel like a Devil May Cry game. I feel like the action is a little, like, I just felt like it was a little too dumbed down. And I don't know if they're trying to make it an easier game. A lot of people complained about it was a little too easy. But I just felt like I was just, you know, using the same attack over and over again when I was playing. I mean, there are some really cool things it does. Like, a dodge button is great because in Devil May Cry 1, I think you need to hit three buttons to dodge roll. Like, R1, X, and then, like, what direction you're going.
Yeah.
Like, this kind of game needs a dodge button. And then the wall running is really cool, too. But it's like they traded for scope. So you have these really big environments, but there's not a lot happening in them.
Yeah, no, the environments felt empty, Jeremy. Like, the boss fights weren't quite as tough or as memorable. I ended up feeling just very flat at certain parts of the game where even though I could just spam the same move, I was trying to show off and mess around with that depth and that complexity that was in the first game, and it didn't feel like it was there. Even moves that you saw in the first game that were great at closing the distance between you and an enemy, like the Stinger, completely changed. They didn't cover the same amount of ground. The animation, it felt like there was more focus on animation than on the actual hit and the impact of that hit.
Yeah,
and so it kind of caught me off guard, but I kept playing, and I think I finished it that night, actually.
Wow.
Which also surprised
both characters?
I don't remember.
Okay, we should say
I don't think it was both. No.
There are two discs, one with Dante and one with Lucia or Lucia, however you want to say it. But like, I didn't try the second character. What is the difference? Is it the same levels? Is it different levels with a different play style? I mean,
It's been a couple of years for me, but it's hard for me to put my finger on. But it was definitely a very different style than Dante. I mean, I don't think she had, for example, Dante had guns, so he had sort of. A way to sort of attack enemies from a distance. Her distance weapon was very different that I recall. And her blades and her combos were essentially a lot more fun to pull off. And there was a lot more that I felt you can do than, say, Dante. And it might just be that she was just a new face or a different type of character. And I think that's what ultimately got me. Like, I can't quite put my finger on what it was, but I really enjoyed playing as her versus trying to get through the part
of it might be that the bar is set with DMC1 Dante for Dante, and there is no bar for Lucia.
I think that was it. Yeah, I think it was definitely partially that because, you know, it definitely wasn't from a story perspective even, like, any interest to sort of keep going with that game. But at the time this game came out, I was kind of like that too with highly anticipated games. Like, I took home Metal Gear Solid 2 and finished it that night.
Wow.
I was up to like 6 a.m.
Awesome.
Almost falling asleep when Fission Mail happened. I had to find out
what happened. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, like, wait, am I asleep now?
Yeah, and Devil May Cry 2 was the same case. But, it ultimately ended with just sort of, oh, man, I don't know how I feel about this. And so I played it and finished it again and played and finished it again. I think three times was enough, but then I just did it a few more times after that.
I think it's hard to be mean to a game after this much time has passed. Like, it didn't personally hurt me in any way, and I'm glad that
customers almost did.
I was almost killed, but I'm glad that the series recovered. I mean, you can look at this as like a step in the wrong direction that they eventually righted. And one thing I found that was odd, and I don't expect Greg to explain this, but like, Kamiya found out they were making a sequel without him.
I didn't know that
during the localization process of one, he found that out, and he's like, oh, why didn't you guys ask me to make a sequel? Like, I don't know what he was doing at that time. Maybe he was doing Beautiful Joe or starting with that, but I just found that maybe that was like the missing touch. But I mean, clearly the series didn't need him after this game. I mean, 3 is really good, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But is there anything else with 2? Like, am I missing anything? Should I ever try it again? Like, this is my fourth try and it wouldn't stick again.
So as far as playing again, it's probably worth mentioning that you can unlock Trish as a playable character.
Oh, okay.
And she actually has Dante's DMC 1 moveset, more
nice.
Or less.
Nice. Okay.
So
that's sweetening the deal.
A lot of people say she's the most fun character.
Mm. Okay.
I cannot confirm for myself.
Okay. No, no, that's fair.
And then, you know, I think it's also worth saying, I think when you have a new IP that probably overperforms, it can be a little tricky understanding why.
Yeah.
And if you look back at, like, Street Fighter, you know, the next Street Fighter game was going to be Final Fight. And it was like they didn't really have – and then there was like Street Fighter 2010, which is like a big joke now. It was like they just didn't really know what the series was yet. You know, it's hard to go back and put yourself in that mindset where, like, you don't know what Street Fighter is. But this is before it was a hit.
Yeah. I mean, they were trying to make a good game. Clearly, they wanted to save this game, which is why they recruited Itsuno to be like – you should figure this out. Help us make this better. But, you know, things don't always work out,
unfortunately.
It's
just a shame that, like, with some sequels, history keeps repeating itself, that the key talent involved in that first hit sometimes doesn't get asked to work on the second one. I feel like that's the story with Metal Gear 2, right? Snake's Revenge.
Oh, yeah, that's
where,
right.
Where, you know, like, Kojima didn't know and then found out later and was like, oh, well, that's interesting. And it just seemed to happen in the Japanese game scene, and I don't know if that's just the business practice or whatnot.
I think, like, directors have more ownership. Now they do. One of the things I discovered in doing research is, like, before Mikami, before Resident Evil, like, there was no role of director at Capcom. In an interview with Kamiya on 1UP, apparently Mikami insisted that that role be instituted at Capcom in, like, the mid-90s. So before that, I don't think anyone could really claim ownership of a project. So maybe there are some issues with that. I mean, this is much, much before DMC 2, but yeah.
Well, he'd be the right guy for that. I mean, just given the success of Resident Evil and how that kind of made him a name we all recognized, right? I mean, he is credited most with that vision of why that game turned out the way it did.
But they wouldn't try and sell you on like this auteur thing. Like, they wouldn't market it that way.
Yeah,
so this is a Kamiya game. You should be interested. Now, I think that's still a relatively, you know, recent idea in games. This is this person's game.
Absolutely. Yeah, and even then, it doesn't happen that often. You know, like Steven Spielberg's name will end up on a box before most directors.
On a boom box, that is.
Right? Yeah, on a boom box.
AKA Angry Birds 3D.
That's actually why I try to talk up Itsuno-san every chance I get, because I think he's terrific.
No, I'm really impressed by his
work. I love his philosophy. Pretty much every game he's done.
Yeah.
Break, and I apologize if I was being stuttery. It's the end of a long recording day in a very hot studio, long recording weekend, but we're going to soldier on and talk about the main attraction, at least I think my favorite of these games, and that is Devil May Cry 3, which is a real turnaround for the series. Again, I urge you to check out my interview with Itsuno. He says this is his, like, a very challenging experience, but one that he's very proud of. It's like a fresh start. It's kind of like casting the series in his own mold. It's kind of shaking off what it was and turning it into what it is now. And I can tell Greg is really excited to talk about this. Please, Greg, like, I want you to extol the virtue. What are the greatest elements of this game? And, like, it's so technical. It's so beautiful. Yeah. It's just I have a real appreciation for it.
Like I said before, I think that's really where you see the identity of the series as it is now emerge. And I think Itsuno-san was fully, involved from day one on this one, and this was his vision from beginning to end. I mean, also, he had a team with him, of course. But again, going back to that art book, this is Devil May Cry 3142 graphic arts, by the way, if anyone's interested. This should be coming out soon, but He talks about how this was the game. You know, he didn't want to just be the director of 2 and then be done with it, because then your reputation kind of
right. I mean, he admits that, like, there was a negative reception. It's not like it's not a fact. Like, people did not like the game in their own way. I mean, like we said, it's not an awful game. It just didn't do what a Devil May Cry game should do.
Right. And so I think the approach for him with 3 was, this is the game where I'm going to put in everything I want Devil May Cry to be. This mm-hmm. is this is my game. And then they say this in the book, so I feel okay saying it. I'm just going to leave it at that. I'll pass the torch after that. He says that he doesn't really think of himself as the father of Devil May Cry. He's more of a like a foster father. Actually, he said foster mother. I thought that was interesting.
Aww.
But
it's very nurturing.
And he was going to pass it on, and then we'll get to 4 later, but he ended up doing 4. But with 3, yeah, that is really where they sort of raised the bar in terms of how technical the combat was. You just have so many options, and there's a lot of stuff under the hood that warranted a sort of unprecedented level of experimentation for a game like this.
Well, yeah, and the answer became like a stylish combat action game where different styles is sort of the key, like giving you different fighting styles to choose from. And so you start out and you might choose Swordmaster, and then you'll mm-hmm. sort of play around with Gunslinger, or you'll play around. Royal Guard was the one that blew my mind because it was almost a defensive, like, turtling style, which I did not expect from a Devil May Cry mm-hmm. game. I expect that from a Street Fighter, a right. Virtua Fighter. You know, that's how Akira fights in Street Fighter. Like, you sort of play defensively. I think that was really, really novel and really smart, just to kind of give players different styles where they can sort of experiment, unlock different weapon and move sets respective to that style that do cool things. And also, Dante is coked out of his mind
yeah.
in this game.
He's pretty crazy.
Riding on rockets yeah. and just all kinds of insanity.
This is the advent of the new metal era of Devil May Cry,
yes.
I think. Like with
borderline
that
screamo stuff.
Crunchy
yes.
guitars and everything. And mm-hmm. Like we're talking about, there's 4 different styles to choose from. You can't choose from them on the fly. You eventually could later in later games, which is mm-hmm. a really good idea. And they're all very different. They all have different move sets. They'll interact with the weapons in a different way. And man, the weapons in this game I love because mm-hmm. my friends introduced me to this game. And when I saw the weapons, I'm like, this was designed by a committee of 12-year-olds and I love it. there was an electric guitar
yeah.
that fires electric bats at enemies.
Yes.
And I'm like,
every
yes.
every weapon is an invention that they came up with for yeah. the game, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. Like ice nunchucks. Like,
oh, man.
Like,
those
everything
are so
is
good.
I mean, everything is way over the top. Like, they recognize, like, this is what Devil May Cry fans want. They mm-hmm. want crazy action, like, unbelievable cinematics. Like, mm-hmm. he does, like, a guitar solo when he gets the bat guitar. Like, what more
oh,
could
yeah.
you ask for?
Yeah. They also dialed Dante back to a younger, more arrogant version of the first game, which I guess they sort of realized maybe in hindsight, like, to sort of having him as a sort of stoic demon hunter. He was almost like Vampire Hunter D in the second game. He just
that's
he had
true,
nothing
yeah.
to say,
yeah.
but he's this hybrid who hunts things.
So is that what D stands for, Dante?
Oh, yeah.
Vampire Hunter Dante.
Yeah.
It's actually Don't Worry.
Yeah, right? yeah. No, so the different styles were really cool. I mean, did that sort of – which style did you gravitate towards? I'm tempted to ask you guys.
Definitely Swordmaster.
Me too, yeah.
Just
yeah.
more moves, you know. I guess first and foremost, I was always there for the melee combat, and that gives you the most you can get out of that.
Yeah, I felt like I was also Swordmaster, but I always wanted to see Devil May Cry played in that Royal Guard style. And you mentioned combo videos. I mean,
yeah.
can you talk a little bit about like maybe what people were discovering and doing?
So this game came out just before YouTube, I guess about a year before, and so it was not an easy thing. I mean, it wasn't an easy thing to even capture footage of a PS2. But there was a small community of people out there that would dissect the game to such a level that they were basically – it was mad science. You know, they were doing things with the game that the game did not teach you how to do.
And it's like Smash Brothers, like high-level yeah. Smash Brothers play
yeah, yeah,
or something
yeah.
like that.
Well, or it was – you know, it was a lot like stuff you'd see for like Marvel vs. Capcom 2, you know,
yeah.
that you could find these combo showcases and where people were just playing the game like you'd never seen before. It's like, mm-hmm. wow, I will never be this good even if I just play all day. And they were doing that with DMC3, and it was just – you'd never seen combat, you know, on this level to the point that it had inspired people to go through the trouble of capturing the footage and, like, uploading it online before YouTube even existed. And they would have these tournaments. They called them True Style. That was the big one. Where you know different people would upload their videos and then they would be judged on the style,
as if the game wasn't judging them enough.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't
judging
though.
You
can't because you can't really create like an algorithm to judge
yeah.
something like
yeah.
style.
No, it's
and
true.
I always compare the games to music. You know, like yeah. improv jazz. And that's how flexible DMC3 was, is that you could really have your own creative ideas and do things with the game that, you know, you might be inventing for the first time.
That's really true. I was thinking of this when you were talking about like my experience, and it's like that improvisational nature of the game where it's like, did I just do that? Like mm-hmm. just figuring your way out of situations and realizing how much wiggle room you have and how many different things you can do mm-hmm. step by step. It is amazing. Like getting a triple S rank like combo, you're like, wow, like I want to do that again. Like mm-hmm. what did I even do to get that to happen? It's yeah, yeah. it's and really encouraging.
The original release of Devil May Cry 3 was also brutally difficult. Like,
yeah.
It was like a reminder that Devil May Cry 1 was a thing, and it was almost too difficult. It had to be toned down for special edition, if my memory serves me right. Like mm-hmm. it was really hard. That Cerberus did not play around.
Oh yeah,
when you even if you got that far.
Yeah, I played the special edition because they let you continue infinitely.
Right.
Because I hate systems that are just like you can either load a save or go through all this rigmarole. So it's like I'm glad they cut that out, realizing it was a necessary step. Although you can still play that. That version,
yeah. There's there's gold mode, which is the easier one, and then yellow mode.
Yellow mode,
interesting.
Yellow, interesting. And then you had a sort of the way the story kicked off with like I did like that sort of in medias res, like Dante versus Virgil, and you're just trying to keep up with what's happening, and then they ended on a cliffhanger, and then it flashes back to the beginning, and you go from there. Even that was like really cool. And, you know, I do make fun of the story a little bit in this game because I do feel like Dante was insane. Like he's like a crazy 20 something or younger, maybe even 19, like who knows. But you do get introduced to different characters in this game that eventually would show up in the series in remakes even later. Like Trish was in this game, but then you had Lady who they had some crazy cutscenes too to Devil May Cry 3. Who was the director
on that? That was the game where they got an actual action movie director.
I thought so,
Shimomura-san, Yuji Shimomura. And he, you know, he had a wealth of experience directing actual action sequences for games, but there's a lot more restrictions when you're working with live action.
Mm-hmm.
And so – and we just had these interviews go up on YouTube, so I'm drawing from that. But he talks about how working on a video game is actually an opportunity for him to, you know, really let his imagination run wild and do things he couldn't have done with movies. And it totally shows. Like the it's a cutscene where he's running down the tower.
Yes.
And he's like shooting all – or he's like cutting up all the demons and he throws his sword and then shoots the bottom of his sword to make it go even faster.
Yeah, faster.
It's like these insane
ideas. Even the opening cutscene. Where he is shirtless and then has a fight inside of like what I assume is his bar or his club, and they have him doing crazy things. Like I remember a billiard table getting turned on its side, the sort of the ball, white ball sailing by his head in slow motion. He shoots it. Mm-hmm. It flies straight into an enemy and kills it. And I'm just like, this is insane. But I loved what they did with the action sequences for it. Even there was this really cool cutscene with Lady. Where they also do the same thing, where they sort of show her tricky sort of fighting style. Yeah. And she's kind of bobbing and weaving. And eventually it ends with her like firing a rocket but using the propulsion to jet herself out of the situation.
Yes, yes. Just like,
which becomes a move.
which was just like, what is going on? This is so nuts.
It's much better than them doing that for Metal Gear, you know, hiring an action director. Because like with this stuff with Dante and these crazy characters, it makes sense. Solid Snake is supposed to be like John McClane, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no. I will say
balls
it was
with your feet.
Isuno-san has said that his philosophy regarding the tone is to take silliness very seriously.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a contradiction, but I love it because that's what Devil May Cry, like, I think, like, the characters play pretty deadpan. Like, what's happening around them is insane, but they're just like, that's just my life, you know? Like, this is what I do.
I like the cutscene work so much in this game that I used to keep a save file and just, like, load the section of that level just to watch that cutscene again. And that says maybe a lot about my sensibilities when I was in my 20s.
I was
into some weird stuff. I mean, The Matrix changed us all, but I really liked it. Like, I have to admit, it was my thing. Nowadays, not so much.
The first movie's still really good.
They did have a cutscene viewer. Did they add that for Special Edition?
I think so.
But
I
think that's the game where they added it. They're like, well, actually, people probably just want to watch these cutscenes.
Yeah, I wasn't good with that guitar weapon, by the way, because you brought it up. I just could not figure it out.
I wasn't good with it, but I loved like using it, you know, just because it was so like just you're using an electric guitar that fires bats. What else do I need to say?
What every kid in the Midwest wants.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I couldn't do that myself without getting arrested, so.
I was hoping there'd be one of these.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, I see what you did there.
So anything else to say? I mean, like, I think if it's really hard to say, like, this is my favorite of them, but it's hard to tell people to play this one first because it's really hard. I don't know, like, should people start with this game or start with one?
What is
or?
Chronologically the earliest in terms of the canon? I don't know how much that matters to action fans, but I mean, I don't know, because it is sort of an evolution of one. And I think one is still fun enough that it deserves to be played.
Yeah.
So, but I don't really know that order matters either.
Yeah, that's true. I just don't want people to try this and then get intimidated into, like, never doing it again.
Yeah, I mean, it is. There's a lot to absorb. There's just a ton of mechanics. I guess in that sense, one is probably the most digestible.
Yeah, I would say start from one. But I do remember three being a little too long. But this was also in an era of, like, video games where – you know, you plumped down your $50 for a game and you got like 20 to 30 hours.
Yeah, you expected 30 hours of a game.
And it did not pull punches in you having to maybe grind to get more orbs to be able to do some of that stuff.
Oh,
and then
for
the fighting style specifically gave you every reason to replay that game because you wanted to, if you were willing to put in the time, experiment and learn some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was the trickster style. I don't know if you got to actually, like, list them, but the gunslinger, swordmaster, and I think it was Royal Guard.
Trickster
was the one that you can actually dodge with.
Yep.
So it was kind of useful in that you could sort of bob and weave around enemies. And then Swordmaster introduced that move where Dante sort of stands straight up and he spins the sword in his hand. And you can sort of either hit an enemy above or below it to keep a combo going. Gunslinger, so we didn't talk about this in Devil May Cry 2, but it also blew my mind that in 2 they tried to come up with combat where you can shoot at multiple targets.
Oh, right, yeah.
I
never did that.
Yeah, that was another moment that in that trailer I was just like, yes, I want to do that.
It looks so cool.
Yeah, and then, you know, we already had the Devil May Cry 2 discussion, so I'm going to let that one go. But but you found out in Gunslinger mode that depending on the gun you used, you can do some crazy stuff. Like you can take a shotgun and basically whip it like almost like a nunchuck for a while.
Yeah,
that's something you can do in the original game, but it wasn't its own thing from what I could remember. Like you can just do it for a brief period, whereas in this one, there was some things you can really do with some of these guns that were pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's pretty challenging to think of a way to have the combat be primarily gun-focused and still interesting.
Yeah, especially because guns don't really do much
damage. The way
the
health is scaled. Yeah, it's not like you're playing Contra.
Yeah, exactly. You know? No, that's a great way to put
it. But they did a pretty good job, I think. You know, Gunslinger was definitely my second most used style.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I will say, like, if you've played, like, Dark Souls and Bloodborne, you will appreciate the combat in Devil May Cry as well. It's just as technical. Maybe it's not as fast-paced as in Devil May Cry, but I feel like it comes from the same philosophy of like, very studied, very, like, I don't know, like I said, technical, to reuse that word again.
Be very aware of animations.
Yeah, exactly.
How long they play and which ones you can get out of, which ones you're stuck in.
Mm-hmm. I think this is the last game we'll be talking about today. We'll talk about DMC a little, but it's a little too recent to go really go into depth on. It's Devil May Cry 4.
Not retro enough.
There's an arbitrary cutoff date we haven't established yet, but I think 2012 is a little too soon for a 2015 podcast. Devil May Cry 4, that came out in 2008 originally, and it just was re-released in on a special edition like in June. I reviewed it. So did Jose. Check out our reviews on IGN US Gamer.
Yep.
I think we basically said the same thing but using our different language skills.
Yeah.
I'm not saying yours are lesser. We just have to say things in different ways.
Yeah, no, we absolutely do.
Yeah. Sorry,
right now.
That sounded passive-aggressive, Jose.
No,
I didn't mean that at all.
I wouldn't have interpreted
it. Actually, didn't until you added the extra caveat.
I was worried.
It sounded fine until then.
Yeah, okay. I was totally good. Now I'm like,
Jose, I respect you.
Dropping judgment.
What did he mean?
Some judgment happening on this podcast.
It's on record, Jose. I respect you. So this game, I feel like I enjoy it. I do feel it is a victim of the HD generation's growing pains in that – It's a game that you play through with one character and then you literally play through it backwards with a second mm-hmm. character fighting the same bosses. And I feel like I was fine with the game ending with Nero. Mm-hmm. Playing through it with Dante, I was like, I'd rather this be just one game I could play through with different characters. Yeah. I mean, I think I give it a 3.5 out of 5. I still think it's great. It's a much better proposition for $20 or $15 than for $60, especially with all the new stuff. But yeah, I do feel like it was Japanese developers along with everyone else trying to figure out how to make a game with this new bar, with the bar raised for budgets.
Yeah. Well, and I mean you hit it right on the head that it was kind of a victim of those growing pains, because this was also one of the first console exclusives that was not a console exclusive anymore.
Yeah.
This was a Sony PlayStation 2 only thing series until Devil May Cry 4, when one day you just woke up and found out, oh no, Microsoft is getting it as well. And we saw some of that transition in the PS2 Xbox era, but they weren't day and date the same. Like Metal Gear Solid 2, I want to say Substance, eventually made its way to Xbox, but it felt like it happened way later. And you already had Sons of Liberty.
It was about, I want to say about a year after that it launched
that
on
feels right.
Yeah.
PS2.
So the cost of making games was so high that as a publisher, you did want to sort of get it on as many platforms as you could, or at least that was how we interpreted it. And then you saw Final Fantasy 13 eventually also became a multi-platform game.
Oh, yeah. That broke Shane Mettenhausen's heart, I remember.
Yeah. There was this transition period where you just saw Japanese or games that were solely on one platform sort of branching out. And it's still happening today to some degree. I mean, now PC is the place to be. You could have played Devil May Cry 4 Special Edition with all of the cool stuff that they added, and I do think that Special Edition makes it a lot better than
when it first
came out because it introduced a lot of reasons to keep playing and keep finding. Like it basically doubles down on combat, which is that game's best thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like we've talked about it, I'm sure, but they gradually reduce the amount of puzzles. Now the only puzzle is like kill all the enemies in the room or like find this object and then hit it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't want to slag on this game too much. I did enjoy it, but I feel like I was playing it in the review context. If you play through with one character, walk away for a few weeks or a month, and then come back and play with Dante, I'm sure it'll be fun. Mm. But like playing through it backwards with another character was just like too much of the same stuff too soon for me.
Yeah.
And I totally understand where that comes from. Like we need to make
Halo.
What's that?
Comes from Halo.
Yeah,
goddamn it. Self on the control room. 100% comes from Halo.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's the missing piece of this puzzle, Jeremy.
Yeah,
Halo. That's why is basically you're here. Like the second half is basically just the first half backward.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, no.
My mind is blown. I can't even talk.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I will say that I think, experiencing some of the boss fights the second time, at least, what was that, 2008 when this
2008,
game came out?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was somewhat of a bummer. But just going back to some of that special edition stuff, like I liked how Trish and Lady turned out as playable characters. And even Virgil, where like they came up, I haven't played a game in a while where I felt like a character was designed with you sort of adapting to that character's, even his mood. Like Virgil's playstyle is very much in the special edition about you being very careful and economical in a fight. Like, you know, less flash, more don't get hit and keep the chain going.
Does he operate around like a meter, like a charge meter that you use?
Yeah, there's sort of a trance state he can enter. Can you talk
so
a little more about
that? They call it the concentration gauge. And basically the idea is that Virgil is a no-nonsense combatant. He's the opposite of Dante, so he's not I don't want to say he's not flashy because he's very flashy.
He's not reckless, maybe.
He's not reckless. He doesn't dance around. He's just killing. And so basically you get rewarded for being very efficient. So if you just it only activates when you're within a certain range of enemies. But any like needless running around will lower the gauge. And if you just stand still while enemies are there and don't take damage, it'll go up because I guess the idea is that Virgil's concentrating. And then it goes up more if you land attacks or if you kill enemies. And then when your concentration is full, you get access to new moves. Your weapon or your moves all get stronger and you get an increased attack range. It's just a simple mechanic that I think also makes narrative sense.
Yeah.
Kind of fits in line with
the story. Yeah, I don't think I've played an action game where I felt like I had to basically embody the same attitude the character has towards combat. Like, I played a lot of action games. I mean, I've played my Devil May Cry's, I've played my God of War's, I've played my Bayonetta's, Vanquish. Like, it's a long list, and I just rarely think I've seen something like that. And I think it's a cool direction for that series specifically. Just because combat Devil May Cry combat and stylish combat is something that when it's done right, you can't help but just go, wow.
And no one is doing it but Devil May Cry and Platinum, basically. Like, that's why I think this game is worth playing despite that issue. Like, the fighting is still great. Mm-hmm. And again, no one else is making this kind of game. So I feel like if you're coming to it for the combat, like Devil May Cry 4's combat is fantastic. Again, you can switch to those styles on the fly. And I can't imagine what kind of crazy combos you can pull out of that, like switching between different fighting styles.
I mean, the people who have mastered Dante's combat are inhuman. It's just mesmerizing. There are multiple times where I've been watching these videos in the office and audibly yelped in excitement. And I don't consider myself that impulsive of a guy. Just like, how did he do that?
Yeah. And again, all the characters, like, there are so many ways to play through this game. Like, there's Dante in his four styles. There's Nero, who's the new character. And I like his weapon a lot. Like, I feel he's there for beginners, but it's still not an easy experience. Mm. And then we have Trish, Lady, and Virgil, right? That's everybody.
Yeah, and you had weapons like Pandora's Box.
Pandora.
Sorry.
It's like a briefcase. It says there's 666 different forms. That's not actually true in
the game. I didn't think so.
Oh, thank God. I wanted you to be the one to finally put that to rest. Yeah.
But there's a lot of forms.
But it felt very inspired even to some degree. I mean, we brought up some pop culture with The Matrix, but I feel like another thing, and maybe this is the reason Pandora exists and maybe it doesn't, but like stuff like Desperado or like Once Upon a Time in Mexico, like just strange, like, hey, I have this guitar case that shoots bullets or something. And it wasn't a guitar case. It was just a briefcase. But it has these different things it turned into. And I thought that was also a sort of a cool thing.
It fits in with the idea that Dante, this is his business, you know?
Yes.
He's a professional demon hunter.
We forgot to mention that. He is like a business owner.
Yeah.
Dante, somehow.
Something I've always wanted to see explored more. But I think the briefcase thing falls right in with that.
Yeah, and it definitely is still like very linked to even like stuff like Blade is very much like Devil May Cry and Dante to a degree, right? Like it helped inspire that stuff. Vampire Hunter D. And The Matrix, like we said. The business side of it, it's funny. None of the games really ever go into that. Like, it's mostly been the story that you play is the mission he chose to go on, but you're never like the business owner coming back like Ghostbusters or something. You know what I mean?
Like, he's got to like sign his employees up for insurance and
I don't know.
Sign a waiver.
Yeah, and I did appreciate that there was some just a lot of effort with that special edition by Capcom to just keep that combat. The reason you want to play that game is to experience its combat, and it is very good. Mm-hmm. Like, no question.
Well, I think a takeaway with vanilla DMC4 is basically you had Nero, which I think initially bugged a lot of people because you want to play as Dante. I actually love Nero now. He's maybe my favorite to play as. But I think he came off at the time as sort of a watered-down Dante. And then Dante in DMC4 felt like a complicated version of DMC3 Dante. So it felt like you took this character in the middle and then split him into two extremes. And so with 4SE, they added some more sort of markers along the way. So Virgil's kind of somewhere in the middle. He's pretty technical, but also pretty approachable. And then Lady and Trish a little on the easier side.
Yeah.
I really like Trish's weapon because you can throw it out. It's like the spinning blade thing, and then you can just keep it in one area while you fight guys as it like spins around and hits them. It's really awesome.
And you kind of mentioned to me, I think, once that it felt more – it's felt sort of – Trish's fighting style felt in line with the Marvel versus Capcom 3 stuff we'd seen. Like just, you know, the yellow lightning, the certain like moves and stuff she whips out. So that was ultimately really cool. I can't help but bring this up, though, and I have to. That board game Devil May Cry. Like, you can't talk about Devil May Cry 4 without talking about the board game.
Well, the fact that you have to play it twice is what bothers me.
A friend of mine, though, did say that there is a frame that he feels like if you hit the dice at exactly the right moment.
Oh, I figured it out.
Actually made that easier to get in.
They did that in a special edition.
Oh, no wonder. It's like if you do it like on like two moves before the side you want, like two spins before the side you want or something like that. Like, I was always able to get it on the right one, but it was still going through the game.
I
would have cut that part out, but I don't know if they can actually do that.
I'm always surprised about the reaction of the board game, because for me, like, ultimately all I want to do in this game is fight stuff.
You too.
Yeah, that's true.
Like the worst thing that can happen in that board game is you have to fight more stuff.
It is, but I think it comes at a portion of the game where you're just, especially that second time, you're expecting for this, you know, this adventure to end in kind of a bang or approach that climax, and it just kind of strikes you as odd. At least it struck me as odd to be there, right? I was just
definitely
like,
oh, that final one where you can get stuck in a loop and just be
yeah.
stuck.
That's what happened.
Like multiple cycles.
2008, rage quit.
I'd like to think that we have escaped that kind of anxiety about padding a game a bit, like with reusing stuff. But I'm not sure if we have. But I think maybe a few years later, this game could have been a shorter game. It just like – that's sort of like a PS2 era mindset where like I'm buying a game. Where's my 25 hours?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
No, I think something we may have missed with 2, and correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't 2 the first game that had something that was like Bloody Palace? Like just an arena-based space where you can just focus on fighting. And that became a thing that carried over to each game. And it's really good, I feel, in each one that they explored it. Even the reboot had it. And I really like that because if you're someone who just wants to waste a couple of hours, you know, just sort of tinkering and getting really good at how the combat works, you have that playground to do that in. And there's sort of a tier to it all, right? You're just ascending this tower to see how high you can get.
I think for a lot of the really serious players of this series, that's where the long tail is because ultimately – you know, you can only run through the story mode so many times before, you know, it's all just kind of routine. But ultimately, what keeps you coming back is the prospect of experimental combat, you know. Yes. So you just want to jump into the combat right away.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
So yeah, DMC 4, like I said, it has its problems that are really related to its time in this world or the time it was developed. I think the special edition is great. Like, again, I say step away after you beat the Nero part. Come back to it maybe like a few days later because then you'll be like, oh, okay, it's a semi-newer experience. But I still think the action itself, the fighting itself is really great. And before we wrap up, I did want to talk about this whole genre that we've been speaking of. I think the official term is stylish action. It's like survival horror. It's like a new – like Japanese creators like their unique
they like to make
genre
up,
names. Yeah, like the zapping system or whatever. You know what I mean? But
free,
like,
free reactive eyes entertainment.
Oh, thank you. I knew I was missing one.
Sorry. Had to.
No, you needed to do that. So like this genre is so weird because I feel like it's a really hard thing to copy. I mean, we had things like Dante's Inferno, correct? And it's hard to think of any other series or attempts to make a sort of Devil May Cry game. I mean, of course, Kamiya went and took his bag of tricks to Platinum and he's doing his own thing with that same kind of experience.
Yeah.
And Capcom is continuing the tradition. But like where else is stylish action existing or has it ever existed outside of those two tiny little like overlapping like windows?
I think it kind of branched off. And I mean, right away when DMC1 came out, you got a lot of games that seemed to take elements like the whole system of buying moves. Remember, there was like Rygar right off the bat.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. And then, I'm missing some big ones too. Yeah.
And then a little later, like God of War.
Yep.
Which was, I think, structurally very similar. I don't know if you would call it stylish action, but
I can see that. Like, I can't believe I missed that one because that is a big one.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not doing the exact same thing, but it is very much about combat and
combat and upgrading and having options and visual flair.
Yeah, the visual flair part, especially. Like, I feel like God of War, what it didn't try to do in technical mastery of combat, it did do in like set pieces. Like when you see Ares kind of stomping around in the background.
Yeah.
But that's a cool visual by PS2. Standards like that was something that you were like, whoa, I didn't think like these games could play with scale that way and make me feel so small. So I think they pushed the envelope more on that side of presentation versus trying to be a stylish quote action game.
And apparently, God of War still exists.
Yeah,
I guess did they just re-release 3 or something?
I think they did a it was an HD before. It's
now it's super HD.
No, but you had like your beautiful Joes. I mean, I see your point. Point though, right?
Yeah.
Like Platinum and
like
Clover.
Who else but Platinum and Capcom basically like are doing this?
I feel like other companies tried their hand at action but tried it in different ways. Like I'll never forget, this doesn't relate exactly to it, but do you guys remember Mark of Kree? Which
tried to turn
combat into like a puzzle to be solved. And
yeah,
you had
but
a
that also was really heavily based around stealth.
It was.
There was a lot of stealth in
that. Yeah, no. Only when you got spotted did you then – they were trying to solve the problem of basically – like fighting in different directions and that being easy to do. But the stealth part was the way you should be playing that game. But there was stuff like that. I feel like there was Rise to Honor, the Jet Li game. Like there was a lot of different experiments.
Experimenting with different combat systems. That was the one where you instead of an attack button, you had the analog stick.
You had the analog stick and you kind of swung it in different directions to
kind
try
of Monster
and hit.
Hunter-ish.
With the first Monster Hunter. Yeah, absolutely. But this was like an isometric field, whereas Monster Hunter still felt like more of a 3D like camera control game. I'm trying to think of some other.
You know, Castlevania: Lords of Shadow, which
or even basically people said,
hey, you know, Devil May Cry is the Castlevania game that always should have existed. So Lords of Shadow kind of felt like them borrowing from DMC and God of War to say, hey, look, we did that.
But yeah, you can go earlier with that with Lament of Innocence.
Yeah,
Lament of Innocence was 100% Devil May Cry-ish. And that was Iga doing that. I just want to point that out. I love Iga to death. But I thought its combat was actually really good as a Devil May Cry, you know, alike. But what that game ran into trouble with is that every room in that mansion felt the same. So it was very hard to like understand where you were.
Yeah.
Sometimes you had to like use this map that wasn't always easy to get to. I'm trying to think of a few others. I'm sorry.
It's just interesting that there was this brief period where people were trying to do the same thing. But now for the most part, it's faded away because it is a very hard thing to do right, I think.
Well, enter the Matrix. But
Was that really an action game for sure?
I don't know if it was. We were saying
in the hall earlier that like there was that period where everyone was trying to do that flashy, stylish action, and I think because of stuff like The Matrix.
Yeah.
And people were getting really good at making games look good, but it was another step to make them feel good and make you feel like you were actually the reason it looked good.
Yeah, and nowadays developers and publishers, probably more to that point, don't really have enough faith in their audience to allow them to control their games. So you really get a lot of like press a contextual button to be awesome. I mean, I heard you guys talking about Batman.
Me too.
And I'm sure those games are great, but whenever I play them, it really feels like I'm just hitting the evade button until I have an option to attack. And it's just like, follow the prompts. It's kind of like, you know, playing
Assassin's
Simon.
Creed is guilty to some degree too. Like
And that's fine, but it's really a shame that that's become more or less what action games are, unless you really go deep into Dark Souls or Bloodborne or something.
There's not really a lot of those,
and there's not really much of a happy medium.
Just to go back to Kamiya's resume for a second, I mean, then there was the Wonderful 101, which I feel tried to be a very hardcore sort of action game, but whose input mechanism was ultimately not suited for, I feel, what that game was trying to challenge you to do.
I agree.
And even though it was stylish combat, it got really difficult and just frustrating because you're trying to draw the shape they want. And if you're using the right stick, there wasn't that precision. But then if you're drawing it, you felt almost like you couldn't attack.
Yeah, because your hand was like
wasn't even on an attack button. Like, how are you supposed to do this?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, yeah, sometimes even Kamiya can't get it right. You know?
Yeah, no,
like,
I feel that's one of the weakest games he's done. But he's totally had a really impressive resume, and he's done a lot for that genre.
It's much slower and more action RPG-ish, but Itsuno worked on Dragon's Dogma.
That's right, yeah.
And that is a very surprisingly kind of like hands-on, just like get dirty with the action kind of game.
He can't help but make Itsuno games, I think. I think it's funny. He comes from this fighting game background, and he's typically done these sort of technical action games. And then Dragon's Dogma is this it's a very literal take on an RPG. Mm-hmm. You know, everything is really happening. But they still have those fighting gamey type things. Do you guys remember one of the classes has a skill. It's just called Reset, and all it does is cancel whatever animation is currently.
Wow, that does sound like a fighting.
That's just such a like geeky thing to put in there. People are like, what do you mean cancel? I don't know what that is. Jeez.
That's great.
That wasn't a flashy game, but it just had a very surprising amount of things you could do with the action, like climbing on enemies and just a wide range of classes and skills.
Yeah, it had that same openness that I think he strives for. The games are made to be broken in a way that will still look and feel great.
Yeah, that game did not get its due when it came out, and I would love to see a remaster of that one.
Me too, for
sure.
Absolutely. It was really cool.
Yep.
So I guess to sum up, stylish action is awesome. So is Hideki Kamiya. So is Itsuno-san. He's awesome too. Like, this is a great kind of game I don't think we see enough. But again, it's really hard to do. And Devil May Cry is great. Like I said, pick up the first one. Pick up the collection. Why not? You know, you can jump between 1, 2, and 3. You might even like 2. You might surprise us. You might surprise yourself. I don't know. But yeah, any final thoughts on Devil May Cry? Like, let's put this one to bed. Anybody?
I'll just say, you know, I think it's a really great genre. It's just super fun and satisfying, and it was king for a while, and now it's kind of on the sidelines, I think. You don't see as many I was very confident in saying when this year when we announced the DMC DE and DMC 4SE, these will be the two best action games this year. But in general, I think I always try and tell people just support the genre as much as you can. If it's something you like, you know, don't.
Yeah, for sure.
If it looks true to the genre, like, I think the genre needs all the steam it can get.
Yeah. Any kind of quote-unquote hardcore action game needs some support at this point. Jose, sorry.
Yeah. It just occurred to me, though, that we were going through sort of the stylish action genre. We didn't mention Ninja Gaiden and what Itagaki
did. Oh, yeah. Right.
I missed every obvious one.
Probably
did for Ninja Gaiden. And it was very much, I feel like, those two games were kind of at the forefront of what stylus action was trying to be, where you had Devil May Cry on one side and you had Ninja Gaiden on the other. And
I kind of feel like that series crawled up its own ass and died.
Ninja Gaiden? Yeah. Oh, no, it absolutely did, especially by 3. Even 2 didn't feel – it felt accurate, like it felt right, but – I don't know if I just was over sort of the weird fantasy that is the Ninja Gaiden world. There was that Dragon Sword game, which, by the way, was fantastic DS. But anyway, I only bring that up because I feel like we would be doing a disservice to Ninja Gaiden if we didn't mention that as one of the games that was sort of pushing that envelope for stylish action. But in terms of Devil May Cry, no, I think that it really paved the way for a new kind of genre in a generation where we were kind of wondering what 3D games were going to evolve into and look like. Like, we had seen sort of the Dreamcast was that next leap for what platforms could be. But when the PlayStation 2 first came out, you had, like, you didn't have really games that showed that off. I mean, you had Onimusha, sure, and that was sort of a samurai's take on Resident Evil. But you also had stuff like Fantavision, or you had other...
That was nothing if not stylish. No, a lot of early PS2 games were held over PS1 games. And they just felt clumsy.
Yeah, whereas when Devil May Cry showed up on the scene, it was, you know, something I had not seen before in 3D games.
I guess you could almost consider Zone of the Enders like an early attempt to do that. It was a different kind of game.
Yeah.
The combat tended to be much more ranged.
Glad you brought
but
that
But it was
up.
Very stylish.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely was second round.
And it did have kind of a technical element to it, but it didn't feel as fully developed.
It was a lot more simplified, right? Yeah. Like, there was just simple buttons, one button or a second button. The shoulder buttons played a big part in how you attacked, and they had like charge attacks. You had like sub weapons you can use. 2 was fantastic, by the way.
I need to play it.
Oh, man, you need to play Zone of the Enders.
I'm going to get the collection sooner or later.
But yeah, I thought Devil May Cry really, really paved the way for a new genre. And that was something that during that console generation, I really wanted to see. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like maybe we do see a lot of that, maybe we don't. I'm not sure. Do we see new genres sort of pop up the way they did during that era?
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just kind of a shame.
We have the Minecraft genre now.
Which was quite the genre. Let's not even but yeah, if you have interest in this series, like you should be playing these games, cuz this is a genre like no other, and it does feel really good to pull off something in these games that feels impossible.
Yeah.
And these games kind of challenge you to do that.
Jeremy, do you at least respect Devil May Cry?
Yeah.
Okay, I figured.
Even though it's not my thing, like, I'm not like, stupid Devil May Cry. I just don't really want to play it, but it's cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad it exists.
I'm glad that you had stuff to say about it.
And, you know, there's still the Shin Megami Tensei connection.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I can rock that.
Featuring Dante.
Dante showed up in Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne.
That's right. Oh, man.
It was like the special edition remake or, you know, like reissue of the game in Japan, but that's the one we got here in the U.S. And apparently he was like a super difficult battle, one of several super bosses they added into the game. Mm. I actually haven't played that part of the game, so I don't know.
That's a hard game.
Exactly what it was like. Yeah, I mean, I like many people, I got to the Matador and was like, I'm done.
I mean, it just beyond
that.
I need to go
back and actually sit down and play it all the way through sometime.
Yes.
You know, because I have 100 hours free.
Right. Who doesn't? So let's wrap up. Thanks so much for joining us, Greg.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. And you can find us, Retronauts, on Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud, Twitch, YouTube, Tumblr, and several other things as Retronauts. Just look for us on any of your preferred networks or social hubs or whatever you want to call them. Also, be sure to go to our blog, retronauts.com, and check out usgamer.net. That's where Jeremy and I work our day jobs with every Retronauts post. There is a blog post that tells you what music we use, what we talked about via like links and things like that. If we mention something cool, it'll be in that blog post. So go to usgamer.net every Monday.
And fantastic art. Sorry.
Ooh, yes.
I had to. Jeremy was painting while we were doing this.
He's been doing some great stuff lately, so you can check out the art there as well.
Oh, thanks.
And we are also on Patreon. That's how we fund everything, like flying Jeremy out here, replacing equipment, hydrating our bodies in the sweltering oven. So please...
Getting watercolor paper,
that too. So please, if you can give $1 a month, that's awesome. If you can give more, that's even better. So please go to patreon.com/retronauts, and we can help you out with some early episodes or maybe some other stuff. Maybe? Okay, who else wants to go? Jose, where can we find you?
Oh, you can find me on IGN.com. I do a bunch of different work there, from news articles, previews, reviews, occasional video stuff. You can also follow me on Twitter, Jose_Otero, and I also run a podcast for IGN called Nintendo Voice Chat, where we talk about all things Nintendo. And in fact, Jeremy was a fantastic guest on our show just recently. Hopefully by the time you've heard this, you will have heard that episode, but if not, you should check it out.
Greg.
You can find me over at Capcom Unity. It is the official community hub
Unity.
For Capcom. We have our own blog, which you can check out. We update frequently. And we also are on Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube, a bunch of other stuff. And we also do a podcast when we can. It's the Capcom Unity official podcast.
Ooh,
we got real abstract with the name.
Official.
SEO.
There you go.
Jeremy.
And you can find me at usgamer.net, on Twitter as GameSpite. And you can check out my chronology of Game Boy games at GameBoyWorld.com. Fun times for all.
And as for me, I am Bob Servo on Twitter. Read my stuff at Something Awful on US Gamer and listen to Talking Simpsons, a chronological exploration of The Simpsons in order, people. And we'll see you next week with a mini episode. Thanks for listening.